The FBI deals with domestic threats while the CIA focuses on international threats, but how well do the two services protect their own agents? In his new book, Missing Man, The American Spy Who Vanished in Iran, New York Times reporter Barry Meyer tells the story of Robert Levinson, a CIA contractor and retired FBI agent, whose kidnapping in 2007 during what the CIA calls a rogue mission remains a mystery to the public and to his family, which is still searching for answers. Time magazine has named the book as one of the best books of 2016 so far. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased that it's brought Barry Meyer to our show today. Hello.
Thank you very much, Leonard.
What did Robert Levinson do before he joined the FBI?
Robert Levinson was initially a DEA agent, but he joined the FBI and served with the FBI for about 23 years or so, mainly working on organized crime cases.
So he started off with drug enforcement, so he always was in law enforcement
of
some
sort. He was a cop, tried and true.
And what inspired him to leave the DEA and join the FBI?
He always wanted to be an FBI agent. Sort of the narrative that he told his family is that he saw a movie when he was 8 years old called The House on 92nd Street. Mm-hmm.
And Edward G. Robinson?
It was sort of kind of a schlock B movie, but it was about a college student who went undercover to unmask a Nazi spy operation, and he sort of like took that whole mantle on and wanted to be an FBI agent.
What kinds of cases did he deal with at the FBI?
Started out working organized crime here in New York, traditional mafia cases, then went down to Florida, worked on Colombian cartel cases and Russian organized crime cases in the late 80s and into the mid-90s.
He specialized in Russian and Eastern European organized crime?
Exactly. Sort of finished his career during Russian and Eastern organized crime, and that is, in fact, how he intercepted with a woman by the name of Anne Jablonski, who was a CIA analyst who also specialized in Russian crime.
But he'd also investigated Raymond Donovan, President Reagan's pick for Secretary of Labor. That was a bit of a problem for him?
It turned into a little bit of a problem for him because the informant they were using on that case kind of got a little squealy. There was a clash within the FBI over the veracity of that informant, and there was a lot of blood spilt within the New York office of the FBI over that case. That eventually led Bob Levinson to transfer down to the Miami office of the FBI, and he kind of restarted his career there, first with Colombians, then with Russians.
Why did he leave the FBI?
He has seven children. And the FBI salary is really not enough when your kids are going to college. So he had to go into the private sector and make some significant money.
And what did he do as a private investigator? What kinds of cases did he work
on? General run of stuff, mainly counterfeit products, looking into counterfeit cigarettes that were being, you know, pirated, Philip Morris cigarettes, counterfeit products of all stripes.
Wasn't there a case where he thought he might be wrongfully indicted?
There was indeed. There was a case involving one of his old FBI informants who went with him to the private sector. It turned out that this guy was pretty bent. I mean, one of the big problems with working with an informant is you never know who's playing who. Sometimes you as the cop are playing the informant. Sometimes the informant is playing you. And this informant kind of himself had gone rogue and was using Bob for his own purposes.
So was being a private investigator tough on him?
I think it was very tough on him. I think Bob Levinson, could he write his own script, would have been an FBI agent for his entire life, till, you know, beyond the normal retirement age. So he was constantly looking for a way to get back into the game, to get back into the government, and he found that being a CIA contractor.
Why go to the CIA rather than back to the FBI?
Because Anne Jablonski was his friend. He had developed a relationship with her. She wanted someone who could go out and collect information for this analytical unit that she was working for, and it really was a kind of perfect fit for both of them.
But the cultures of the FBI and the CIA are quite different. We discovered that when there was a debate over how you interrogate prisoners. The FBI said you become friends, and the CIA said you torture them.
Right, but Bob was not initially working for the spook side of the CIA. He wasn't working for the spying component. He was working for the analytical unit, which is basically people who are gathering information. He had those kinds of skills as an FBI agent. The problem arose because of the kind of pressure that was on the CIA throughout in the mid-2000s to gather information about Iran. They kind of let him run loose.
Do you think that Anne Jablonsky was being clear-minded in her judgment when she offered Bob a contract with the CIA? Was it, to some degree, was it more simply that they were friends?
Anne, I think, was friends with Bob, but I think she realized that Bob had sources, Bob had talents, and that those talents could be best put to use for her unit. Now, things kind of ran out of control shortly afterwards.
Was he ever really an employee of the CIA?
He was a contractor. So basically, he wasn't an employee in the terms that he had a regular salary, he got benefits, but he had an official contract.
Did he fit in with the CIA because of his FBI background?
Well, I mean, the CIA is sort of like this, it's like a vacuum cleaner. I mean, they hire people as contractors, they buy information on the street. So, the CIA is like sucking up information from all these different kinds of sources.
Do they provide training?
No.
Mm-hmm. He inundated Anne Jablonsky and her colleagues with memos and tips. Did they feel he was being a little oppressive?
I don't know what they felt, but it certainly was a huge volume of information. Bob was trying to prove himself. He saw himself, as having a bigger role within the agency, if at all possible. And I think he was trying to prove to them that he still had what it takes to be a good agent, to be a good collector of intelligence.
This is on drugs.
No, this was on you name it. Mm-hmm. This is on Russian organized crime. This was eventually it became on Iran. It eventually became clear to him that at the time he was hired, that was the type of information he wanted. He had no experience in the Middle East. He had no experience with Iran, but he was like any guy in his mid-50s, late-50s, who is trying to change, to play a part, and to keep himself relevant. I mean, that in many ways is the kind of tragedy of his story.
How did he get involved in the Litvinenko case, the former KGB agent who was poisoned with radioactive materials?
He was hired as a private investigator by a lawyer for someone who wanted to gather information that would suggest that Putin was involved in the Litvinenko murder.
Donald Trump know about this?
You'll have to ask Donald about that.
But he didn't go very far into that investigation.
No, and actually, nobody did. I mean, the Litvinenko case was just closed out this year when this British inquest was completed, but that took about 6 or 7 years to run its course.
I'm speaking to Barry Meyer, who's book is Missing Man, The American Spy Who Vanished in Iran. It's published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. Anne wrote to Bob early in 2006 about the CIA's budget issues in Congress. How did that affect his work?
Well, there was no money. The CIA's, authority gets approved by Congress every year. It comes with a budget. So at the end of 2006, the bill that authorizes their new salary was hung up in Congress. So basically the tap in terms of Bob's contract was turned off. And what I sort of describe in the book is this exchange of emails between them saying, where he's saying, I can do this for you. I just need money. And she's saying, hold your horses. We're looking for money. We're trying. And it's just going back and forth between them. I mean, Bob had done quite a bit of work related to Iran for the CIA before the tap got turned off. He was eager and anxious to do more. And it was just the sort of struggle. Do you have money for me to do this? She's saying, hold on. We're going to try to find you the money. And it was in this kind of cauldron that he decides to go to Iran.
despite the fact that he isn't being paid. He's going to do this on his own dime. But Go ahead, I'm sorry. What was he? What kind of work was he doing on Iran?
Basically, the group that Anne was working for was looking for information in certain specific areas. One had to do with money laundering by Iranian officials. The second major area was information about the steps that Iran might take to avoid the U.S. embargoes, economic sanctions against Iran. And there's the scene that's pretty vividly described in the book based on Bob's report, where he goes to Istanbul, Turkey in late 2006 and meets with two Iranians and who are telling him this is what we need to get around the embargo. He goes there under the guise of being a Canadian businessman with the sort of unusual character from Toronto who acts as the go-between. And they're telling him we need, you know, this aluminum-making material and fertilizers, and we're going to pay you. The way we're going to do this is much in the same way that Saddam Hussein got around the Iraq embargo. We're going to give you discount oil if you help us get around the U.S. embargo.
He also was involved with Global Witness. What's that?
Global Witness is a good government group based in London that's funded by George Soros. And he was basically hired by Global Witness to look at the involvement of Russian organized crime in the Ukrainian gas business, and this has come up in the current Trump campaign.
So did all these things dovetail, his work for the CIA and for Global Witness?
Well, he was certainly feeding the
CIA. The CIA is not a liberal organization. George Soros is a famous liberal billionaire.
Well, I would say that the CIA is agnostic where information is concerned. They'll take it from anyone. They'll take it in any way they can. And basically, Bob was giving him reports, unbeknownst to Global Witness. He was giving them reports that he was producing for Global Witness about the Ukrainian gas situation.
So he was working for two bosses at the same time.
That is absolutely correct.
Or George Soros was actually paying for his work for the CIA.
Actually, they were both paying him at the same time.
What was his plan? What you say he decided to go to Iran. What was his plan?
It was fascinating. I mean, he was going there to meet a fugitive American murderer by the name of Dawood Salahuddin, who had fled to Iran in 1980 after assassinating an aide to the former Shah of Iran outside Washington, D.C.
He was a convert.
He was a convert, exactly. He had taken on the mantle of the Islamic Revolution, killed this individual in 1980 and fled to Iran and has been there ever since. There's long been speculation that Dawood would leave Iran, come out of Iran for a reduced sentence here in the U.S. A lot of people have approached him, and Bob thought that he could do that.
Did the CIA have a presence in Iran at the time?
Absolutely not. I mean, that was the big problem, is that they had very little or no intelligence on the ground. It was probably the most difficult country for that and North Korea, the probably two most difficult countries in the world for the CIA to penetrate.
But you say he didn't know much about the Middle East or Iran. He didn't speak Arabic. He didn't speak Farsi. What did he think he could achieve? An American wandering around there would stick out like a sore thumb.
You know, it's one of the great mysteries of this story is why Bob Levinson. In fact, the thing that attracted me to his story in the first place is why would an American with seven children take the risk of going to Iran to meet a fugitive American? And it's that story, that tragedy, that kind of spills itself out in many different ways through the story of this book.
And much of the book is from the perspective of his wife. What did she tell you he was saying?
You know, she hid that from from Chris, his wife. He did not alert her that he was going to Iran, and I'm sure Chris would have told him, you should not do this. I'm sure if Bob had told any of his friends that he was going to Iran. There were very few people that knew he was going to Iran.
He doesn't seem to be all that prepared. He had to get a new passport before he could go to Dubai.
Again, Bob's willingness to take this risk Bob's willingness to try to find a new life for himself, to try to keep his hand in the game in this world that has changed around him, is sort of the kind of emotional core that kind of drives the events that unfold.
Then there's another person involved in the story, Ira Silverman, a staff writer for The New Yorker. How did they know each other? And how did he know Dawood Salahuddin?
So Ira is a former producer for NBC. He was an early investigative producer for NBC News, worked with Brian Ross for many years, and really was a decorated television producer. After his career comes to a close, he works for The New Yorker doing magazine articles for them. Ira knew a cop in D.C. who thought that he could sort of lure Dawood back to the U.S. He was put in charge of the murder investigation.
Why is it so important to lure him back?
You know, people became fixated with Dawood. I don't know whether you've come across these people, but there are these fascinating criminals who reporters are invariably attracted to because they think they are going to open up to them, they're going to provide them with information, and Dawood has been like a magnet for these people. He's, you know, every journalist that's kind of ventured through around, be it Ira Silverman, other people for The New Yorker, other journalists for other publications, Dawood's been like a stop along the way. He's an English speaker, he's an American, and he spoke out very forcefully about what he saw as corruption in Iran.
And Ira Sullivan knew him?
Yes, Ira Silverman.
Silverman
yeah. Knew him and went to interview him for The New Yorker in 2002 and wrote a long article and basically concluded in that article that Dawood could potentially be a source for American intelligence within Iran.
So was Bob's idea to go and meet with Dawood? And with what did he have in mind? There are claims that he went there as a private businessman to investigate cigarette smuggling.
That was his cover story, and that was the cover story that Dawood stuck with. But Bob's intention was to go there to try to slow, you know, kind of a meet and greet, to say hi to Dawood, and eventually begin to develop Dawood as a CIA source within Iran.
And was that meeting sanctioned by the CIA?
Not to my knowledge.
How did he even get into Iran?
He went to a part of Iran called Kish Island, which is off the coast of Iran in the Persian Gulf in between Iran and the Emirates. It's the one place in Iran that you can go to as an outsider, even as an American citizen, without an Iranian visa.
And then you can go from Kish Island into Iran proper?
You absolutely cannot do that. In fact, you know, you would go to Kish Island, you would meet, like, say you were an Iranian-American, you would meet your Iranian relatives there, whatever. You then go back to the Emirates. You cannot go from Kish Island to Iran.
So he was hoping to meet Dawood on Kish Island?
He did meet Dawood on Kish Island. They had a brief meeting there, and that is where Bob Levinson disappeared.
My guest is Barry Meyer. His book, Missing Man, The American Spy Who Vanished in Iran. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Barry Meyer, who is a reporter for The New York Times. He's been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and two-time winner of the George Polk Award, author of Painkiller, A Wonder Drug's Trail of Addictions and Death, also A World of Hurt, Fixing Pain Medicine's Biggest Mistake, and now A Real Departure, Missing Man, The American Spy Who Vanished in Iran. It's published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. You didn't write about medicine here.
I didn't. It was, you know, I've always wanted to write. When I was younger, I sort of toyed with the idea of being a mystery writer. I was really fascinated by John le Carré and James M. Cain, folks like that. In fact, I wrote a really terrible mystery novel. All right, fast forward, career as a journalist, I learned a lot about reporting and investigating stuff, and then a real-life mystery falls into my lap.
And le Carré could have written this story.
These characters are straight out of that. They're sort of morally ambivalent. It's not clear where the good guys and the bad guys meet or interact with each other.
How did Bob Levinson explain all of this to his wife? Because he was using personal money, he also had to tell her that he would be out of contact with her for a while.
He gave her a good story. He said to her, he traveled a lot. He went to some dangerous places. And he basically said to her, you're not going to be able to reach me for 24 hours. I'm going to be going to Dubai. I'm going to be in a place where you're not going to reach me. Don't worry. I'll get back in touch with you. So basically, he goes to Dubai for this group Global Witness that we mentioned. And it's while he's there that he gets on a plane, makes the one-hour flight to Kish Island from Dubai, expects to be back the next day.
This is March 10th, 2007.
That's correct. Actually, he leaves on March 8th. This is a few days before his birthday.
And as you said, he met with Dawood before he went missing. What did Dawood tell Ira Silverman about that meeting?
He told him about five different stories that changed over time.
Can we trust Dawood at all?
I would say Dawood has a very active imagination, and the general thinking is that Dawood was being closely monitored by Iranian intelligence or the Revolutionary Guard, and that there is a very good possibility that one of those two entities knew Bob Levinson was coming and was waiting for him and grabbed him not long after he got there.
Ira and others try to get Dawood to cooperate with the investigation, but he remained adamant that Bob returned to Dubai and that everything was okay. When did Ira start to doubt this source that he had trusted so much in the past?
I would say that it was relatively soon afterwards, although, you know, I guess Ira was confronted very humanly with this terrible predicament that he in his own way had contributed to his friend's disappearance. And that's a very, very hard thing to wrap your brain around.
The FBI and CIA both claimed that Bob wasn't working for them. The CIA even said that Bob's contract had ended in 2006, denied that they knew what he was doing. How did they explain how he got the money from Anne for the trip?
You know, one of the most disgraceful things about this entire episode has been the posture of the CIA. Not only did they lie to the FBI when the FBI began to try to investigate the circumstances of Bob's disappearance, they subsequently lied to Congress, and they continue to lie to the American public. They continue to misrepresent Bob Levinson's activities. While you can dance on the head of a pin and say that we did not send Bob Levinson to Iran, you can say there was nothing, you know, his contract had expired. The fact of the matter is that the CIA encouraged Bob Levinson to collect information about Iran, to go to dangerous places to collect information about Iran. And there'll be no justice for his family until the CIA acknowledges what it did.
But this is a politically fraught situation. The Bush administration was pushing for sanctions against Iran at the time.
It remains a politically fraught situation. The Obama administration, look, the FBI, I'm just a reporter. I spent many years investigating this story. My investigation turned up evidence of the involvement of Iranians in Bob's disappearance. I think if you went to the FBI, if you had James Comey here instead of me, and said to him, is the evidence that the U.S. government collected, has that proven to you that it's virtually impossible that people within Iran were not involved with Bob Levinson's capture and disappearance? In all honesty, he would say, I can't see any other alternative. But the United States government has not said that. The United States government, despite all the political problems that we have with Iran, has not stood up and said an American citizen was captured, detained, and possibly murdered by people in Iran.
We've gotten other people back from Iran. Is the assumption that Bob Levinson is dead?
I think we don't know whether Bob Levinson is alive or dead, but what we can say for sure is that Bob Levinson was dealt with in an extrajudicial fashion. I mean, if you think of the model of the CIA black prisons, that's the model that Bob Levinson was dealt with within Iran.
The stories that were published about Bob's disappearance featured quotes from people who had some harsh words regarding how he did his work. Was that a way to diminish the situation?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, there are people that might have harsh words about how I do my work or your work or whatever. I mean, Bob Levinson was not an angel, you know. Bob Levinson was not a perfect person. But we don't abandon people for those reasons.
Press TV in Iran, a government-run news site which Dawood also worked for, ran stories claiming that American news sources had it all wrong. Did that indicate to American officials that the Iranian government knew where Bob was?
You know, Iran is a complex country. There are factions throughout Iran. These factions don't necessarily work with each other, collaborate with each other. But the simple fact is that factions tied to Iran's intelligence hierarchy or its religious hierarchy know exactly what happened to Bob Levinson.
Why do you think the CIA and the FBI seem to be less interested in finding out than you might expect?
I think that the FBI kind of bungled this investigation at the beginning. It was more of a matter of incompetence than anything else. But once they got their wheels turning, they did investigate. They have found out things. And I think it would behoove all of us, certainly, you know, the public, the U.S. government, and it would do honor to Bob Levinson and to Bob Levinson's family for them to reveal what they have learned.
Who were Dave McGee and Larry Sweeney?
Dave McGee was a lawyer, a former federal prosecutor in Florida, who became involved with the Levinson family. He knew Bob very well, both when Bob was an FBI agent and a private investigator. He was a friend of his, and he basically carried sort of the legal fight for the Levinson family. Larry Sweeney is a former FBI agent who served with Bob.
There was an email under Bob's name that was sent to Ira Silverman and to Bob's wife. What did it say?
Well, that was an email the email I think you're referring to was sent in the summer of 2007, just several months after Bob disappeared. This email basically was a cry for help from Bob.
Did they believe that it was really from Bob or from his captors, or do they think it was a fake from an imposter?
Well, the remarkable thing about this email was that it was copied to a number of people, a couple of journalists, a couple of lawyers, and the FBI discounted this email. This was sent, as I mentioned, in the summer of 2007. Much later, 3 years later, when an email was sent, this first email was discounted by the FBI.
What was it asking for?
It was basically asking for help.
Well, what kind of help? Send in the troops?
These people have captured me. They're holding me. They want to make, you know, contact with the U.S. It was dismissed by the FBI. Fast forward three years, an email arrives with a videotape showing Bob Levinson as a captor. The sender of that 2007 email and the sender of that 2010 email, the Gmail address are almost identical, and the FBI realizes they made a tremendous mistake in 2007 ignoring this original email.
That had the email had a ransom note along with the video file.
Correct.
And what were they asking for?
They were asking for the release of three individuals and several million dollars. It turned out that these three individuals were not individuals that the U.S. government could locate, either in prison here or in prison in Iraq. But on the basis of that email, a round of secret negotiations began between the U.S. and Iran about Bob.
Did we see any difference in approach from the Bush administration and the Obama administration?
You know, I think there was some difference. There was certainly an effort by the FBI as time went on to try to investigate this case more forcefully. But at the end of the day, when it came to the Iranian nuclear deal, when it came to the exchange of prisoners, when it came to forcing the issue of the Bob Levinson case with Iran, there really wasn't very much of a difference.
Bob's wife went to Iran. What did she hope to achieve?
She did. Unfortunately, she was dealt with kind of disrespectfully. I sort of outline what happened to her in the book when she went to Iran. The sad thing is that Bob Levinson, and to some degree his family, had become prisoners of two governments, not just of Iran, but of the United States government and the antipathy that exists between these governments.
And then he had bad health. He had diabetes, gout, and he needed medications.
That's correct.
Do we know whether, we don't really know whether he's alive.
We don't. We do know he was kept alive until late 2010, possibly early 2011. So he was kept alive for 3.5, 4 years. We don't know his fate at the present.
There are a lot more twists to this story. I can't even get into the whole story of Boris Burstein and some others. President Rouhani of Iran made some remarks regarding Bob. What did he disclose to Western journalists?
He basically took the same line that his predecessor, Mr. Ahmadinejad, took, which basically was, we don't know anything about Bob. We don't know anything about him.
When the nuclear deal was signed with Iran, many people mentioned that Robert was not part of the deal. Did the Obama administration try to make him part of the deal?
The Obama administration claims that it spoke to their Iranian counterparts about Bob, that their Iranian counterparts claimed that they didn't know anything about Bob. The way that the Levinson family found out about the return of the four American hostages was through television reports, the way that we all did. The one thing that the Obama administration has not done, however, is release all the information that the FBI has gathered about Bob's case. And I believe very strongly that the only way to bring Bob's case to a conclusion is to do so.
There were reports yesterday that as the prisoners were freed, the United States sent $400 million to Iran, kind of a ransom?
It would certainly seem that way. But it was, again, just for these four individuals. There was nothing about Bob that came out as a result of this exchange of $400 million.
How's the Levinson family been coping for the past 9 years?
They are quite remarkable people. It's a very strong family. He has seven incredible kids who have gone on living their lives. They have managed to cope because they are very strong as a family. The thing that strikes me as the ultimate cruelty of this story is that whomever took Bob Levinson, whoever held him and may still be holding him, whatever purpose they might have thought they were accomplishing by grabbing and holding him has long expired. There's no more, really any more value in keeping him as a captive or in concealing his fate. And that out of humanity, they really should apprise this family of what has befallen him.
They feel that they've been abandoned?
They certainly do, and all evidence suggests that.
The book we have been discussing is Missing Man, the American Spy Who Vanished in Iran. It's written by Barry Meyer, who is a reporter for the New York Times and a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize, two-time winner of the George Polk Award. It is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Thank you so much for being on our show. It's
Thanks,
a fascinating
Lauren.
Story. I'm sorry we couldn't go into all the details, but that's why people buy books.
It would take 235 pages, but I thank you.